Yes, welcome in to McLaughlin, Carroll, and Terp. Rolls right off the tongue, guys. I'm Scott McLaughlin. Usually when I'm on Sundays, guys, it's Sunday skate. It's during hockey season. Rest assured, listener, we are not doing a hockey show here on August 24th in the middle of a Red Sox-Yankees series. With Tom Carroll, WEI social media, digital content star.
Thank you.
Patriots, Red Sox, everything. Justin Turbin, Celtics expert, WEI video operator extraordinaire.
That's right.
How you guys doing on this fine Sunday?
No complaints at all. I mean, Red Sox are tearing it up. It's a beautiful day. I'm happy to be here with you guys.
I am fantastic. The Red Sox are on the precipice of a four-game sweep of the Yankees in the Bronx after a week where everyone felt awful about the team coming out of that Orioles series. And now here we are feeling great heading to the last 30-something games here of the season.
Yeah, it felt like they were at like a real kind of turning point moment. Rob Bradford even wrote that in a column during the week, that this felt like a kind of a dividing line going to this Yankees series, where it's like, oh man, is this going to be, maybe it started a little later than usual, but it's just going to be another one of these August swoons that we've seen from this team in recent years. Instead, we're sitting here after three straight wins over the Yankees, including an absolute beatdown that you just heard the highlights from yesterday afternoon in Game 3. Game 4 coming up tonight, 7:10. You can hear it right here on WEI 93.7 FM or the Odyssey app if you're in New England. And yeah, all of a sudden it's like, whoa, what do we have here, guys? We got ourselves a baseball team. We got an exciting fall coming up.
It feels like, too, it's the second time since the All-Star break that they've answered a call when they've been tested. Everyone was talking about coming out of the All-Star break, that stretch with the Cubs, the Phillies, the Dodgers, the Twins, and then the Astros, and they fared pretty well in that stretch. And then this time they come in, losers of, what, 7 of the last 10 coming into the series. People are like, uh-oh, is it another one of these swoons? Like you said, they haven't had a winning record since 2019 in August, so felt like they were going to kind of go in the wrong direction again, and they answered the call again against the Yankees. And people going into the series saying it was the biggest test of the year so far, the biggest series they've had, and they've totally dominated and answered the call.
They've totally answered the bell here. And out of this series, so after tonight's game, whether they win or lose, they have 31 games remaining in the season. And of those 31 games, 22 of them are against teams with records 500 or worse. So, I mean, they could really start to build some momentum here. That's why this series was so important. It was kind of the tail end of a really tough stretch of schedule for the Red Sox post-break. And like you said, they answered the call here. So they get the win today. Even if they don't, they could really go on a run here. And it's really until that last two series of the year where you're at Toronto and then home again against the Tigers. Until then, it's kind of cake. So they have some time here now to figure out the 4-5 starter situation as well. That you feel really good about their 1-2-3. Roman Anthony has really rounded into being like the one of the leaders of this team, which is crazy for a guy that age. You just start feeling a lot better about this Red Sox team after the games you've seen here at Yankee Stadium. And baseball's crazy like that, right? Like, it's been one of the most roller coaster seasons for this team. What were you saying before the show started? Was it early June?
Yeah,
they were five games under 500.
And since then, they have the third best record in baseball.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I think I heard Arkin did they're at 130 games, did the 65-65 breakdown. And it's, I think these past 65, which might have been that June date. Yeah, it was like second best record in baseball behind only Milwaukee, I think. So, the pitching, the way the pitching has stepped up in this series, like, obviously, you feel great about Crochet. He's been awesome all season. As we get it going here, like, we can get into Cy Young case. He's obviously in that conversation. Should he win it? He's awesome yesterday. But the night before, Brian Baio, 7 awesome innings. Whitlock and Chapman just completely shut the door. You know you feel good about those two guys at the end of your bullpen. I thought Thursday's game, what you got out of your bullpen, was huge to see, where Giolito, not great, only last 4 2/3. Bullpen comes in 4 1/3 shutout innings. Like, all of a sudden, like, that group needed it, too, because that was the problem against Miami and Baltimore, was your bullpen letting some of those games slip away or turning up, allowing a blowout to become a close game, and then you know, that whole situation when Chapman has to come in at the end of the game, can't use them the next night. So starting to feel a little bit better about a couple bullpen guys beyond Chapman and Whitlock. Huge as well. But this team, yeah, like we were all so worried about them not adding a starter, not adding, you know, a high leverage bullpen arm. And those still might surface as reasons this team ultimately, say, doesn't win a World Series. But for now, this team's pitching. And, like, that is what's carrying you in this series in particular.
And that was another thing. It felt like for most of the year, people were so hesitant to buy in on what Lucas Giolito and Brian Bello were selling. It's like, eventually they're going to regress to the mean. And it's just, it's not the case. I mean, this is who they are. And Brian Bello becoming a legitimate number two has just been so big for this team. And I mean, you can't overstate just how important those guys have been, because you know what you had with Garrett Crochet, but you didn't really know what fell in after him. And obviously you were expecting a lot more from Walker Buehler whenever you gave it, what was it, $25 million, whatever it was when you gave him on that prove-it deal. And to have those guys step up and pitch the way they have consistently night in and night out, you just know what you're getting with those guys. It's so big for this team.
Especially after the year that Bello had last year, where he gets that deal coming into 2024, you think he's going to be your number one. And for the first part of that season, he just looked lost. And looking back on it now and after the Netflix doc and Cora talked about it, Bello was dealing with a lot off the field without his family being here, young kids, newly married. I mean, that's tough for a guy at that age coming to a different country, doesn't really know a lot of people up here. And it's just a lot to deal with. So now that he has his family here, and he ended the year strong last year too, so he kind of found his happy place, so to speak, ended the year strong, finally gets to start his first game. I think it was mid-April when he finally made his debut after coming back from the injury. And he's been, you know, an excellent number two starter.
And on top of that was the expectations that he came into the league with.
Yep.
I mean, right away, people were dubbing him Baby Pedro and all this and trying to push that narrative. And I mean, we'll see if he eventually reaches that, but you have to just be happy with what you've gotten. And those expectations are tough to handle, especially when you mentioned what he was dealing with. I mean, you can imagine where he was at.
Yeah, I saw Lou Maloney on Twitter after a start the other night. And by the way, Lou's going to be on the radio call with Will Fleming tonight. So national TV game, only place you can get a local call on WEI. Someone tweeted, I'm like, I still think you're in trouble with Brian Bello as your number two starter. And Lou was like, you know, we don't have to find a negative spin here. Like, he's been great. Like, June 15th, I swear we didn't intentionally use that as like some magic dividing line, but since June 15th, he has the sixth best ERA in all of baseball. Like, if he's pitching like this, he is a very good number two starter. Not passable, not like okay, I guess. No, that's a legit number two starter.
He hasn't really given you a reason this season to feel unsafe with him on the mound. And if you wanted to make this case last year, like let's say the Red Sox somehow didn't crap down their leg to finish 2024 and made it to the postseason like they were tracking towards, and then the end of the year happened the way it did. If you wanted to tell me that you didn't feel good about Bello heading into last postseason, I would have been like, okay, I get that, right? Because you had the first half go the way it did. You had everything from years prior go the way they did, where you had the highs of highs, you had the lows of lows. This year, he looks like he has finally rounded into form, into being the guy that everyone here kind of thought he was going to be. And I personally feel really strong about that 1-2. I still have a little hesitancy with Giolito because you do see those, you know, like the games he had in Philly, and like he just has those moments, right? But your 1-2 right now, you feel really good about. And like you mentioned, the bullpen, when you have your guys healthy and you have your guys up, right? I mean, Chapman is as good as anyone right now. At his age, too, it's just remarkable, the season he's having.
And 22 of 14 of Brian Bello's 22 starts have been quality starts. And those kind of starts go a long way when you're thinking about where this team has been in past August, right? Like, obviously, we've talked about the losing record. But remember the Kyle Barraclough game. Like, that was because the bullpen was so overspent because they didn't have quality arms and the starters weren't going long enough. And that's been
the Yankees
different.
Had Paul Blackburn
that
playing,
was their
playing
version.
The role of Kyle
yes,
Barraclough.
That was their version. That was ugly for him.
It was fantastic, though.
Ooh, yeah. We're loving it.
And, you know, so, like, looking ahead to tonight, it's like, listen, you already won 3 of 4. This has been a good weekend. We all want to get greedy, go for the sweep.
Do it.
Also, like, important start for Dustin May, because we're talking about this rotation. We know Walker Buehler's moving out of the rotation to the bullpen, so your fifth starter is very much TBD right now. We'll see if maybe we get news during the show of who's going to start Monday night. But Dustin May, right now, he's the guy penciled in as your number four. You need four starters in the playoffs. He's given you quality starts his last two times out. If he goes out there and beats the Yankees tonight, you can start to feel good about him too, right? Whereas if he goes out and it's five runs and 3 2/3, then you're back to, okay, who's the four and the five? Because it feels like you only have three. So I know, like, looking for the sweep, it is greedy, but hey, you're here. Go for it. And you need to, if you can start to feel good about Dustin May in the process, then just one other, like, really important piece in this puzzle.
Yeah, and he's given you six innings his last two times out. And he's a guy that's pitched in really high leverage spots in his career. So he seems like the guy to me, like when I'm at these games sitting basically first row, if I can, if there's spots open, when he's coming off the mound, like, he's tuned up, man. Like, that guy is a gamer. Like, even if he's not pitching particularly well, like, he gets fired up to go six innings and give them, you know, X amount of pitches. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, if he's going deep into a game, he knows, like, that's what I have to do to get this team towards a win. Like, he's not worried about his win-loss. He's just worried about giving them good innings and eating innings and pitching well. So, yeah, if you have him as your four and you feel good about it, that's huge for this team down the stretch.
Yeah, he's a professional. I mean, you guys mentioned he's pitched at, like, in big spots throughout his career, pitched in the World Series, pitched big playoff games as well. And that, I think that's big for this team, especially a younger team. They can lean on any experience they can get, right? And you really, Alex Bregman's done a great job with that. And we see all the clips of him coaching them up in the dugout. And, you know, they really seem to have a really open conversations about, like, how they can improve each other. And I think that's great for this team. And that leadership and guys that have had success for this team is huge. And Dustin May is another one of those. And same with Nathaniel Lowe. Like, he was big for the Rangers when they won the World Series. And you picked him up for free. And I think you got to look at that as, like, it improves the trade deadline grade a little bit. Like, I know it wasn't a trade deadline piece, but you added him after. And, you know, to have a competent first baseman playing again, and that's no shot at Abraham Toro, who did great when he was here and obviously got outrighted back, and that could help with, you know, it doesn't hurt to have that depth. But to have a guy that's been in those big spots and can, you know, really raise to those levels, that's huge for this team.
Yeah, if you get a Nathaniel Lowe who gets back to what he's been basically his entire career, and obviously he's off to a good start here, he's had some big hits, that is, it's massive, and it does feel like a deadline addition. It's, you almost don't want to give, like, you don't want to give Breslow credit
but
for it.
You kind of have to.
Reluctantly,
like, you
kind of
lucked
credit
into, yeah, it that he became available, but it is an area where you needed an upgrade, because you're right, Abraham Toro did as well as you could have expected for a while and then really fell off and kind of found his career level, which is several levels below what Nathaniel Lowe's career level is. So, yeah, tough season for him in Washington, but now you're looking at it and it's like, certainly against righties, and he is a guy who's hit lefties in his career too, so, like, the path is there for him to potentially be an everyday player. Obviously, you want Roman Gonzalez in there against lefties, but could be first or second, so yeah, vibes are high. We are certainly riding that here on this Sunday afternoon.
We're in a great mood.
Yes. You can join us. 617-779-7937. That is the call and text number. We are with you until 4 o'clock, doing lots of Red Sox. We're going to have some Patriots. Terps are Celtics experts, so we're going to touch on Celtics at some point. I've got a Bruins thought at some point. So we're going to mix everything in, but obviously we're starting heavy Red Sox as they go for the sweep of the Yankees tonight. Again, 617-779-7937. Tom Crisafulli has your trending, and we will be back after a short commercial break. That was Yankees manager Aaron Boone. Just you know, some nice audio for you guys to hear on a Sunday afternoon. Talking about how much this weekend has sucked for the Yankees, and it sure has, as the Red Sox have won the first three games, including a 12-1 blowout Saturday afternoon in Game 3. And, guys, it is just like, it is great to watch Yankee Stadium just clearing out as that game gets further and further out of reach. Seeing that city and that fan base start to melt down. I heard Christian Arcan was on before us, and he's talking about you know, he was predicting, like, if Red Sox sweep this, he's predicting Aaron Boone out. If not now, then after the season. And, I mean, I admit, like, I hadn't thought of that, but it's like, boy, that would be one, that'd be like an old Steinbrenner move. That'd be the George Steinbrenner would do that, would blow out a manager with, like, a month left in the season if, you know, things start to go poorly. I don't know if the kids have that in them, but yeah, it is a not good for the Yankees, and it's great for the Red Sox right now.
Doesn't it feel like he's had a very long leash as is?
Yes. Extremely.
Like, I understand they made the World Series last year, and had they not made the World Series last year, I don't think he would have been retained. But the fact that this guy has had this managerial job for as long as he's had has been very surprising to me. It's been a big mystery. Like, I cannot believe they've retained this guy as long as they have.
The Yankees have enjoyed keeping guys like Boone and Cashman in place despite all of their fans hating both of them with every fiber of their being. And it's actually hilarious. So I was down in New York for the Giants-Patriots preseason game. And when I got to my car, I had FAN on the radio, and it was Giants post-game coverage still, because it was within 3 hours of the game being over. And I heard two callers. Both callers were like, yeah, I know this is a Giants post-game, but I'm actually calling about Aaron Boone. And, like, they cannot get enough of crapping on Aaron Boone and wanting that guy to not be the manager of the Yankees. And me personally, I thought they were going to fire him after that fifth inning in the World Series last year. Like, if they fired him after even making the World Series, I don't think anyone would have blinked an eye and been like, yeah, they shouldn't have done that. Like, he's been a guy that's been on the hot seat basically since he got the job.
In 2018.
Yeah.
And
so
we're still sitting here in 25 talking about it.
It's wild. And, like, I'm not the type of guy that thinks that putting a new manager in place in baseball automatically makes you a better team. Like, I just don't, like, it's different than football. Football, I think it can change almost entirely. Basketball, not as much. Baseball, almost none. I think hockey, it can help sometimes too. You get a new voice in the room. Like, we've seen that over and over again in hockey. But yeah, I don't think the Yankees immediately vault to being a World Series contender if they, I don't know, pick your hot manager candidate to get in there, or pick the former player that just retired that they're going to install. Like, that's the new thing to do. But Aaron Boone clearly isn't the guy.
Yeah. And I mean, you see it just with the way they play, like, in the series, where, look, we've all focused in on, and there's been plenty of talk in this station about the Red Sox do some dumb things, and they do. And even in the series, they have not been completely immune to that. But then you see the Yankees and you're like, oh, the Red Sox might be kind of dumb sometimes. That is a really dumb baseball team. Like, I mean, errors all over the place. You get, you know, Volpe, like, trying to throw behind Jaron Duran the other night.
Volpe's bad.
It's like, what is he doing?
The biggest difference, though, the Red Sox are a young baseball team. You expect this from a team like the Red Sox. The Yankees are full of veterans, guys that have been here before and just forget how to play the game of baseball.
Yeah, it's funny. And that's a thing with the Red Sox where they say, oh, we don't really, like, waste a ton of time on fundamentals anymore, right? Like, that's been a big talking point. And yet it seems like the Red Sox, as the season has gone along, have cleaned it up a little bit. Like, early in the year, it was still the same sloppy Red Sox we've seen in recent years, whereas now it seems like they've rounded into form. Like, they're maybe just more locked in now, and maybe because they're all hitting a lot better, they're just able to focus more in the field. So yeah, the Yankees, it's going in the other direction, right? They're regressing as the season goes along. This is not when you don't want to be peaking, right? Like, you want to be peaking as you head towards the postseason, like the way Boston is right now. New York is heading in the opposite direction. It would be great if the Red Sox could see them early in the postseason and really, like, stamp it home that Boone needs to go and send them on a reset mission.
This, to me, does not look, this Yankees team, to me, does not look like a team that could make any sort of run. I mean,
no.
I understand they have the veterans. They got this super pen that, I mean, what a joke that looks like. They hyped up this bullpen, and it has not shown up at all. So, I don't know. I don't look at this Yankees team as a team that can be competitive in the postseason. And I think that is honestly a reflection of the manager. I mean, this has been an issue for years for this team. And when you're spending that much and you're supposed to be in the upper echelon of teams with the roster that you have, the money that you're spending, and you continuously fall short, at some point it has to come down on the manager. And again, we were just talking about it. This is a team with established players who have played very well in this league and just seemingly forget how to play the game. It's just like, at some point, that is a reflection on the manager, and that is Aaron Boone.
Yeah, and you guys mentioned the playoffs and potentially facing them. Well, right now, these are the two teams in those first and second wildcard spots that would play in that 4-5 matchup the way that MLB playoffs are now formatted, where the three division winners are the top three seeds. Top two wildcard spots are 4-5 facing each other. Right now, Red Sox are fourth, Yankees are fifth. So even more importance on these games is, if that is the matchup, who's at home? And I know Red Sox are dominating in the Bronx right now, so maybe you wouldn't necessarily fear going into Yankee Stadium, but you want that at home. You want that at Fenway. The Red Sox have been a home team all year. They've been great at Fenway. Even with this weekend in the Bronx, they're under 500 on the road. So you want those games at home, and now the Red Sox have a 1.5-game edge over the Yankees with the potential to build on it even more tonight. Another series coming up at Fenway against the Yankees before the end of the season. So, you know, Toronto's, I don't want to say they've run away and hit, but they're 5 games up for the division lead. So an uphill battle if either one of these teams are going to catch Toronto. So, yeah, you are looking at who's going to be that top wild card and get to play at home for that best of three first round where all three games would be at home. There's no going back and forth. So, yeah, that's huge, especially for the Red Sox, the way they've played at Fenway.
They're 41-25 at home. Yeah. I think that's second best in the American League. So
they've been awesome at home, and they keep talking about how it's a different vibe at Fenway now. And, you know, the last few years it wasn't like this and yada, yada. I think that that's more about just the team playing a lot better than it is about the fans. People can try and make it a fan narrative, but I think it just goes to if the people of Boston feel like their baseball team is going to play well, they will show up at Fenway and be a really good home crowd. If they don't, they're not going to show up.
They're meaningful games.
Yeah.
And I think you hear this from professional athletes around the city as well, where they'll say Boston fans understand the game. They understand what's going on. And it's tough to sell a product that's going out and you just know when they're just going to nosedive in August. It's happened even the year they went on the run in 21. I mean, they fell backwards into the postseason. They had to go into Washington to win that series as well. It wasn't like it was a dominant run to the postseason. They got hot in the playoffs, and that was a wicked fun run, but it wasn't necessarily like that throughout August, and we really weren't really sure what they were.
And that 21 team was fluky.
It was fluky.
It was fluky.
Yes.
It was fun, but it was fluky.
That's just been the reality of this team for the last 6 years. It's like once you get to August and September, these games haven't been meaningful, and now you're here, and there's genuine buzz, and there has been all year. I mean, from the beginning of the year, people are like, hey, this team could make some noise in the American League, and they're finally playing up to the expectations, and you know you're getting contributions from up and down the roster. I mean, yesterday, by the fourth inning, all 9 starters have reached base. You had every like top 6 had a hit or whatever it was. So yeah, when you're getting contributions like that, it's just so much easier, and it's also easier to root for the team when like they're a fun team, they're a fun bunch, they all seem to enjoy each other, and I think that makes it much easier to kind of root for a team like that.
Yeah, and this team can win the American League. Like the AL is wide open. There's no one running away hiding. Like, even if you want to look at the standings and how many games separate them, but in terms of quality of these teams, like, no one strikes me as like, oh, that's the dominant team where, like, everything's going to go through them. It's like, yeah, Detroit's been really good most of the season, but they've had some hiccups. Toronto, I still don't know if I'm fully buying that pitching staff. You know, they've kind of been up and down. Like, if you look at run differential, which, okay, not a be-all, end-all, Red Sox are number one in the AL in run differential. They're third in baseball behind only the Milwaukee Brewers, who I think everyone would have to agree is the best team in baseball right now, and the Chicago Cubs are second. That's it. So, yeah, it's like, all right, they can be the first wild card, and I would give this team as good a shot as anyone to win the American League and get to the World Series. Now, you know, if you have enough to win it all, like, hey, let's just get there
first. Let's win a pennant first.
Yeah, but AL is wide open. Like, I almost don't even care where teams finish or how many games separate them. It's like, no, they've all had ups and downs. None of them are perfect. They all have flaws. So we pick apart the Red Sox. But, like, again, season-long stat run differential. This isn't since the All-Star break. This is the entire season. They're number one in the AL. It tells you something.
It hinges on Bayo continuing to be the guy. Crochet, you feel great about, right? And even though he hasn't pitched into a postseason, he just profiles like a guy that's going to continue to be a horse down the stretch here. If Bayo can continue to be the guy that he has been all season long, that this team is going to be a problem in the AL throughout the postseason. And for me personally, Bale has not given me a reason to not believe in him heading down the stretch so far.
I mean, especially with this team, I know a lot of people like to look back at the beginning of the season and how up and down that was. They were like 500 like 14 different times, like something ridiculous like that.
They've been perpetually 500 since the Mookie trade.
Right, and that just hasn't been the case. I mean, since the second, or since what? It really coincides with the Devers trade, right? Right after they sweep New York, I mean, that's kind of been a line drawn in the sand. But also from June, you've had guys like Trevor Story get hot. Roman Anthony comes on, and he's been, just looks every bit of a player that could eventually be like a generational player. I mean, you just forget the kid's 21 years old.
It's crazy.
I mean, you see the professional at bats he takes, like, he's just so calm and cool. Like, it's, the moment's never too big for him. And like, look at what he did on Thursday night in his first game at Yankee Stadium. He really propelled that win. Like, when you're looking at things like that, you talk about how this is a young team, but like, they don't act like a young team. Sure, there's times in the field where it's like, all right, that was a little stupid. Like, that was a little dumb. But this has been kind of an issue with the Sox for a while now. They've always been among the league leaders in errors. So that's going to happen. But when you're looking at it with, like, guys like Roman Anthony, you got guys like Bregman as well. Trevor Story's an established veteran. Like, I don't necessarily worry about them being a young team going down the stretch.
No, they're feeling themselves, man. Like, that bat flip from Anthony, I watched that video like 75 times.
Moment.
Oh, what a moment. And you hope that a moment like that, we can look back on and be like, okay, that was like a true turning point moment for this team where it was like, hey, we're going to be the guys that dominate this rivalry over the next
also,
few
the,
years.
Also, the best part is that Marcelo Meyer and Roman Anthony both hit a home run in their first game at Yankee Stadium.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's that kind of moment where it's like, that feels defining for Roman Anthony's young career and kind of like defining for this team where it's like, all right, they're not just beating the Yankees. Look, they had the lead. It's like, you know, that wasn't go ahead. It wasn't game winning home run, but it was the exclamation point and like just with a little bit of swagger too. And like, you're right. Like, that's a sign of like a team, a player that's really feeling himself right now. And again, that wasn't to cap off the third straight win. That was the first night,
right?
You know, coming off three straight losses. So, which also you have felt that too, where like, yeah, we're all gonna, you know, this is what we do on sports, right? Like, we'll panic when they lose three straight to Miami and
right.
Baltimore. It didn't feel like the team was. Like, it felt like, it feels like they've believed in themselves and had, Alex Cora's even talked about it on this station. Like, they have a different vibe than previous years. And you see that. You see it come out in moments like that where they seem to have confidence that, okay, even when they're struggling, even if they've lost a couple in a row, they're going to step up and figure it out and bounce back. And they have, like, pretty consistently over and over again this season.
And with the trade deadline, which has really been kind of the marking point the last couple postseasons or the last couple seasons, they're looking at the trade deadline and how they perform after. Do they start hanging their heads? And that starts with Alex Cora. And it has for the last couple of years where Alex Cora will be like, oh, we didn't do enough, and they'll kind of punt on the year. It felt like the outrage around the postseason or the trade deadline this year was more so from the fans and from the people, not from within the organization. Like, they believe in each other to the fullest extent. And when they're dropping games like that, I generally look like you said, you know, they struggle with the Marlins and Orioles. It was like, what, they lost 7-10 going into the Yankee series. But they look at it, it's like it's 162 game slate. They don't ride the highs and lows. They just continue to play their brand of baseball. And I think that's so important.
It feels like post-Devers trade, that could have been a disaster moment for the team. That could have been a moment where Cora lost the clubhouse, right? But it's clear that they needed to get Devers out of there, and that losing Devers from that clubhouse was something that the team was very okay with, because you heard all the quotes coming out of that clubhouse days after it happened. It didn't really seem like guys were all that shook up about it. They're like, yep, it is what it is. Like, let's move on. And Scott, I remember you and I were like talking on Slack shortly after the trade, and I was kind of freaking out. I'm like, this trade is ridiculous. They got nothing, blah, blah, blah. And that might still be true. But I remember you saying, you're like, I'm actually in favor of this trade. Like, I think they needed to make this move. And it seems like you were dead on.
Early on, yeah, feeling pretty vindicated about that. But yeah, I don't know that guys on this team actively wanted Rafael Devers gone or felt like he needed to be traded, but you're right, they didn't seem to miss him,
right?
There wasn't a freak out of like, oh my god, what the hell are we doing? No, it was like, all right, we got a job to do, we're gonna show up and go play. And they've no question, been a better team since then, which is just one of those things in sports where it's like, sometimes you can't just measure it in terms of like home runs in, home runs out. It's like, sometimes it goes beyond that in team chemistry and
baseball, especially.
It is a thing, and it's hard to quantify, right? It's funny how often we talk about the nerds and the numbers in sports taking over, and it's like, there is that kind of nerd argument for that trade too, right? Like, people highlighted, you know, how that contract projects over the 10, 11 years left on it or whatever it is, and how it was going to be negative value, on the whole. But it's like, but there was also a human element to that trade where it was like, we think we're going to have a better clubhouse after we make this move. And that has proven to be true.
And the flexibility it gave the lineup. It gave Cora so much more wiggle room. I mean, they are a loaded team. They're a very deep team right now. And it gave him a way to insert different players into the lineup that he otherwise wouldn't have been able to. I mean, that was kind of the biggest issue, was he was not willing to play first base. He was not willing to move around. And that's his right, I guess. I mean, obviously he was frustrated.
It's really not.
It's not, but especially when you're making that much money. But I mean, if that's how it was going to be, I mean, it was better off. And I think part of that, too, was probably the clubhouse wasn't too happy with that.
Correct.
When there's guys that are missing out on opportunities because he's not willing to do what's best for the team. And I mean, I don't blame this at all for Rafi Devers, but the Giants have been one of the worst teams in baseball since the trade, which I also kind of find humorous in this.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, it is kind of funny.
Yeah, like that they thought he was like the missing piece for them.
Yeah.
Because that's a team that's been searching for that big bat for a while. They've struck out on a couple free agent pursuits, and yeah, you're right. That team has a lot of other issues. It's not nearly as simple as, oh, Devers came in and he killed the team. But yeah, he has not been the player that they were hoping for, at least not yet. And certainly has not, did not elevate that team. They are now nowhere near the playoff picture. They were sellers at the trade deadline. So
also might be worth noting too that Kyle Harrison was supposed to start in Worcester today, was scratched from his start. So could possibly come and contribute for as that fifth starter. It looks like it's going to be Richard Fitz, but I don't know. Insert the Brian Windhorst meme when he's pointing. Like, why would they scratch him from his start?
Very interesting.
I mean, it does spark conversation, especially if you have that guy that can come in and contribute.
Yeah, it seemed like the two options for Monday were either going to be him if he got called up, or Richard Fitz, which would be the more natural, well, pardon the pun, fit. But so, yeah, we'll see what ends up happening there. I do think we're going to see Kyle Harrison at some point before the end of the year. Like, it feels like sometime in September they'll want to take a look at that and just see. You know, look, he's had some success in the majors.
Yeah, he's good in the majors.
Like, it's not like this is going to be his major league debut or anything. So I do think you kind of owe it to yourself just to see, like, hey, is he in a better spot? Is it starting to click? Can he give us something? And you want to know that before you need like an emergency start in the playoffs or something. So
right.
We gotta catch another break here, but I'm Scott McLaughlin with Tom Carroll and Justin Turpin. You can join us. We're going heavy on Red Sox. 617-779-7937. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to WEI. I'm Scott McLaughlin with Tom Carroll and Justin Turpin. Just heard Trevor Story's home run as part of the Red Sox 12-run outburst yesterday. Big win over the Yankees. We've been talking about that throughout the first hour here. We're with you up until 4 p.m. And let's go to the phones here, guys, and take Orlando from Boston. What's up, Orlando?
Hey, what's up? How y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
Okay, now, I just want to say just one thing. Like, during the trading deadline, I have to go back to that because they didn't do nothing to better this team. Now, if they had done that, I feel like the AL is not, like, really complicated to win it. Now, imagine if they got something that was worth an add-in to this team, what could have been. So we might answer that question probably after they make the playoff, if they do. But I want to know what you thought, because they didn't do anything. You got Matt and you got some other guy, right? That wasn't enough to me, and I'm surprised they didn't do nothing to better this team, considering what they're doing right now.
All right, thanks, Orlando.
But Orlando, and he just left. But I'll ask you guys, like, everyone kind of wanted Joe Ryan, right? Like, that was the big prize. You wanted that true number two / like 1B guy at the top of the rotation. But it sounded like you needed to give up Roman Anthony to get Joe Ryan. Where would this team be without Roman Anthony right now?
You also did add to the team. right? Yeah. Like, Steven Matz has been good. You added Dustin May, who we were talking about earlier, has been good his last two starts and has a big opportunity tonight. And that's a guy that clearly they feel decent enough about if they're going to move Walker Buehler out of the rotation. I mean, that's a factor in this. We all know who Garrett Crochet is. We know, we were talking about it earlier, how good Bayo and Giolito has been. The fact that you're taking Walker Buehler out of the rotation, you have to feel a certain way about Dustin May and the way he's progressing if you feel comfortable enough to do that.
Yeah, I was frustrated that they didn't do more, that it wasn't a better starter and a better reliever that they added. And I still think that could cost them.
Like, right.
Again, I'm pretty high on this team right now. I think they're good. I said, I think they have as much a chance as anyone to win the AL. But, yeah, I do wish they had done a little more. And we'll see. Like, maybe Dustin May does really help round out your rotation nicely. Merrill Kelly, for me, was the guy I would have liked, who I think went for a pretty affordable price to the Rangers, who, you know, have struggled. But he's been pretty good for them. He's given, allowed two runs or fewer in three of his four starts with Texas. They had been linked to him even on deadline day. Like that afternoon, he was coming up as a potential Red Sox target, and they didn't get him, and you end up with Dustin May instead. And that, it just felt like, yeah, like that's pretty disappointing. Like, even take Joe Ryan out of it, because I kind of always thought that was a long shot. Now we'll see if maybe it happens in the offseason. But even Merrill Kelly to me would have been a pretty decent upgrade over Dustin May. And now we'll see how they pitch down the stretch. But that's how I felt then. And then, look, a lot of relievers moved. Now, some of them have been really good with their new teams. As we touched on earlier, the Yankees added to their bullpen, and those guys aren't working out at all. So there's not always guarantees there. Steven Matz isn't doing a whole lot here. So, like, we'll see. But I did think the Red Sox could have used another, like, solid seventh inning guy. Because, look, Greg Weiser, Brennan Bernardino, like, those guys have had their moments. They've been good in this series. I still have questions about that long term. Whitlock and Chapman, we all feel great about. But how are you getting there if your starter only gives you five?
And Weiser was so overused at the beginning of the year. Yeah. I mean, in early July, he was first in appearances. I mean, the guy, they used him so heavily earlier in the season. I also think, like, I don't think anybody can look at the trade deadline and say they couldn't have done more. Like, this was all they could have done. It's just, how much more were they willing to do if it meant parting ways and breaking up the chemistry that this team has? I think that's been one of their biggest attributes. I mean, I think it's something that's overlooked in sports oftentimes, but we're talking about how this team's just feeling themselves. And I think it's, I forget who wrote it and what publication it was, but their players are getting to the ballpark early. People are happy to be there. The players are happy to be around each other. You don't want to mess that up. I think that's a good way to break up the momentum that you have. So maybe they're looking at it, it's like, we can't really afford to take someone out of this and risk and jeopardize doing that. But yeah, they definitely could have improved more at the deadline, but it's like, how uncomfortable were you willing to get? Obviously, if you're going to take one of the key players, like Jarren Duran was somebody that was floated around a lot. I mean, he's a big part in what they're doing in that locker room. And I know it's been an up and down season for him. It looks like he was turning around a little bit last month, and he's kind of struggling a little bit now again, but he's big in that locker room. And like, the players really respect him. People really kind of, he galvanizes that room. So I just wonder that as well, is like, how uncomfortable were you willing to get in moving guys like that?
And I think a really good example of that was a couple weeks ago. I was at the park pregame, and Justin Slayton was out in full uniform on the mound doing some sort of simulated game, right? As right. He continues to try and come back. A bunch of his teammates were just sitting cross-leg behind the mound, like watching him go through his game. Like, they weren't out there in the outfield, you know, playing catch. They weren't taking swings on the side. They were just like chilling, watching Justin Slayton go through his thing, like BSing back and forth while he did his thing. And I think that just speaks to the chemistry, right? Like, in the past, guys going through that type of stuff, they're just out there on the field by themselves with the coaches. There was like seven guys hanging out watching Slayton go through his thing. And that's another guy too, coming back. He looked good in Worcester the other night. Justin Slayton's going to be huge for this bullpen down the stretch if he can be healthy. So chemistry is huge for this team right now.
We were just talking about Devers and how it wasn't a personality fit with this team. And you risk bringing in a guy. Everyone, I think part of it too, was the expectations that fans had. Like, oh, you turn Joe Ryan into Dustin May and Steven Matz. Like, of course you're going to be a little bit disappointed in that. But it's also like, what are the personality fits? If you're going in, bringing in a bigger name trade deadline target, like a Yandy Diaz, whatever it may be, are they going to be willing to maybe take nights off because of how loaded this team is. And we talked about it earlier as well. You got to give them credit for, and I know he fell on their lap, but Nathaniel Lowe, I mean, that filled one of the places that people wanted to address at the trade deadline was first base. And you went out and got one that's a proven veteran that has had big games and big moments. I mean, we talked about the World Series run earlier. So I don't know. I think in the moment, people were very frustrated about it because this is a team that was certainly worth adding to. It was right when they were on that big winning streak, and we've seen what they can do. But you also, it was kind of a tight line to walk there. So, I mean, now that we've seen it and what we've seen from Dustin May, you feel a little bit better about it. But like you've said, Scott, I mean, it could certainly come back and blow up, and then I look like a fool.
Yeah, I didn't like the idea of like potentially trading away Duran, which was rumored, you know, basically all season at times. They have this logjam in the outfield. It felt like every 2 days you'd hear the San Diego Padres really want Aaron Duran.
Right, right.
Like, they were linked to them like every day. And it's like, yeah, on paper, you could see how that makes sense. If you're just looking at spreadsheets and it's like, all right, yeah, we have this many outfielders. Jaren Duran's struggling, you know, not having his normal season, especially against lefties. Okay, yeah, we can. That might make sense. But then you'd get the reports from people in that room, you know, our own Rob Bradford among them, about how much he's loved him there. And it's like, well, yeah, okay, that probably doesn't really make sense unless you're getting absolutely blown away. And then, as it turns out, the whole do you have too many outfielders, how can you play them? It's like, situation kind of, I don't want to say resolved itself, but like, you have Willie Abreu and Rob Refsnyder out right now. Marcelo Meyer's done for the year, which means now you sit down Rafael, you're using at second base a little. And it's like, okay, well, all of a sudden, you know, there's not such a logjam and there is enough playing time to go around. So
you could never have enough depth. I mean, the reality is a lot of the times this stuff figures itself out.
Yeah.
And we've seen that with this outfield. Obviously, Willie Abreu going down and Marcelo Meyer leaving in the infield. Like, those things just, unfortunately, when you're playing 162 games, they figure themselves out and you need that kind of depth. That's what goes into good teams. So it really never made sense to me blowing up that what they have in the outfield.
All right, Scott McLaughlin, Justin Turpin, Tom Carroll with you here on WEI. We're here until 4 p.m. talking a lot of Red Sox, Yankees. We are going to mix in some Patriots. 2 weeks from now, week one against
back.
The Raiders. You can join us, 617-779-7937, and we'll be right back after this break.